Tell the people what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Greetings, Toronto. I am your host for tonight, Steve DeSilva, on Radio Basics here on CHRY 105.5. As you may or may not already know, Radio Basics is the radio wing of Basics' free community newsletter. It's a community media movement sweeping Toronto. If you don't yet know about us, if you haven't, you're not currently getting our newspaper at your door, hit us up. If you liked what you hear tonight on our show, and if you like what you see on our website or what you've heard on our show in the past, give us a call. You can call me here in the studio at 416-736-5656, or you can check us on our website, basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. You can also hit us up at our email, basics.canada@gmail.com. Tonight at Radio Basics, we're going to be switching it up from our normal format, and we're going to be dealing with a special full-length feature of our program. We're going to be giving an in-depth look at the recent FBI assassination of Detroit community leader and imam of the Masjid al-Haq, the al-Haq Mosque in Detroit. If you've been following this case in the corporate media, such as in the National Post here in Canada, or the many corporate newspapers and media outlets in the United States that have covered the story, you may have been led to believe that this Muslim leader was the leader of a radical Sunni so-called sect that wanted to establish an Islamic caliphate in the United States and that was involved in planning terrorist activities. This is what you may likely have been led to believe if you have just followed the corporate media coverage of the FBI assassination of Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah. It's essentially the story that the corporate media has put out to justify the assassination of this African-American Muslim leader. And this is also how the corporate media has maintained and flared up more anti-Muslim hysteria among the people. But it's funny how the media can run away with a story and de facto judge and try a person before they've ever even been formally charged or convicted of a crime. The presumption of innocence is never applied to the racist corporate media. Because these allegations of terror and charges of terror, which the media have put forth in relation to Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah, actually have no merit in reality, have no basis in facts, and are not even corroborated by the Federal Bureau of Investigation itself, which is the force that killed or assassinated the imam. On October 28, 2009, the 53-year-old Detroit imam of the Masjid al-Haq was shot 18 times and left for dead. The FBI launched its attack on Imam Abdullah after it had built up a formal criminal complaint against him using statements provided by paid infiltrators of the mosque, who were themselves convicted criminals. And nowhere in the indictment documents were to be found charges of terrorism or violations of federal law. What the official 42-page indictment document did indicate, interestingly, and a point omitted from the mainstream sources, was that one FBI infiltrator had actually tried to enlist Imam Abdullah, in a plan to attack the 2006 Super Bowl in Detroit. Again, this was an FBI infiltrator coaxing and trying to convince Imam Abdullah to carry out a terrorist attack. And the late Imam Abdullah rejected the proposal, and this, again, according to FBI sources, saying that he would play no part in hurting innocent people. The charges listed in the criminal complaint against Abdullah were all constitutional rights of American citizens. Imam Luqman was charged with possessing guns, which half of Americans own, and with preaching separatism, which is not only a matter of freedom of speech, but has been a political position held by countless popular black, indigenous, Chicano, and Puerto Rican individuals and organizations over the last 100 years in America in the face of the systemic racism, barbarism, and exploitation that these subject national minorities and nations hold within the formal boundaries of the United States. According to the indictment document built up from statements provided by the FBI infiltrators, Imam Abdullah had told his followers that if the police ever tried to take his weapon, again a constitutional right, or tried to apprehend him, he would resist. So with that information in hand, provided by the FBI infiltrator, the FBI actually had the information they needed to construct the scenario whereby they would be able to kill Abdullah. So how was Imam Luqman Abdullah killed? The FBI set up an elaborate operation in a warehouse with stolen goods whereby they lured and trapped the imam into a scenario that they knew would lead to his execution. The story that has been put out by the police but has not yet been confirmed by ballistic evidence or independent inquiries is that Abdullah shot an FBI dog, after which he was shot 18 times and left for dead. Now, if he did indeed shoot the dog, and it was hasn't actually been corroborated by any sources but the so-called official police sources. Now, if he did shoot the dog, it was likely in self-defense after the animal had been directed to attack him. What's also reported is that a medical helicopter was flown in and out of the scene of the crime, according to official sources, in order to remove the injured dog. Now, if that is indeed how things played out, we will make note that the dog was removed while Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah was left to die after being shot 18 times. He received no medical attention for his gunshot wounds. In fact, representatives of the U.S. Attorney General's office have confirmed that Imam Abdullah never actually fired on federal agents. On November 2nd, the National Lawyers Guild in the United States wrote that, quote, by publicizing the killing and arrests as related to terrorism, absent any such allegations in the complaint, the FBI seems to be engaging in the same tactics used in its counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO, which is a program that was widely used in the 1960s and 70s to target black leaders. Again, quote, in which it spied on infiltrated and disrupted political movements. Imam Abdullah had a close relationship with Imam Jamil Abdullah Alameen, formerly known as H.R.A.P. Brown, who was a field organizer for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and later served as a national chairman of the Black Panther Party. The director of the Masjid al-Islam in Washington, D.C., told Press Television, quote, what the government is doing by assassinating Imam Luqman is trying to intimidate the Muslim community, especially the black community. And I say that because the immigrant community, which is about half the Muslims in the United States, and the African-American Muslim community, which form the other half, have different views about Islam in America and how it should be fostered. He continues, the immigrant community has been frightened since the 9/11 terrorist attack, and they practice a kind of American-style Islam. Now, the killing of Imam Luqman is to intimidate us African-Americans, but our message is different. We will not be intimidated by the U.S. government or by the FBI. Indeed, communities have not been intimidated by the assassination of this Detroit leader, evidenced by more than 1,000 people in attendance at the imam's funeral on October 31st, 2009, and the multiple demonstrations and community events that have been held since. Many organizations are now calling for an independent investigation into the killing, which usually consists of a civil rights division of the Justice Department investigating whether there are violations of federal law. But, however, given the FBI is under the jurisdiction of the Justice Department, a department that persistently targets Muslims and black community leaders on trumped-up charges, it would be naive to the extreme to assume that such an investigation would be independent. Similar to how things play out in Canada or in Ontario with the Special Investigations Unit, former police officers investigating police officers for their crimes. Abiyomi Ezekwe, editor of the Pan-African Newswire, as well as the Detroit-based Makawi, Michigan Emergency Committee Against War and Injustice, are calling for a truly independent People's Commission of Inquiry that would issue a report and demand sanctions and criminal charges against all those involved in the shooting and in ordering out the operation. It seems like the only crime that Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah has committed in the eyes of the U.S. government isn't being a strong an inspiring community leader and organizer. Like countless black leaders and vocal opponents of the U.S. government have been gunned down by the U.S. government for precisely the same reason over the past decades. Currently, there are 11 people standing for who have been charges have been applied to, one being the son, one of the sons of the Imam Mujahid Carswell, who was arrested in Windsor, I believe the day after Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah was killed, as well as 10 other members of the Masjid Al-Haq, as well as two Canadians from Windsor. Over the past weekend, I had the privilege and the ability to attend multiple events in Detroit dealing with the assassination of Imam Luqman Abdullah, the first one of which was a benefit concert called Mu Today, You Tomorrow, in reference to Mujahid Carswell, the son of the Imam, who is facing charges. And the benefit concert was widely attended by legendary figures, over 25 performers, a couple hundred people in attendance. Among the performers included, Professor Griff from the legendary black, revolutionary hip-hop group known as Public Enemy, as well as Umar bin Hassan, one of the founders of The Last Poets, which is a very influential hip-hop, particularly poetry, musical group, came out of the late 1960s, and it's still around to this day. That was the first event I attended. The second one was a community event held by the organization Workers World in conjunction with a number of other mass organizations in Detroit, at which the context in which the Imam was murdered was detailed and investigated. That is the context of violence against people's movements, and especially the black community and now the Muslim community in the United States, which is a capitalist state and an imperialist state. At those two events, I was able to record a number of audio excerpts from multiple organizations and individuals with their thoughts on the assassination of this Detroit community leader. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to be getting into those excerpts. Before we go to that, and before we go to commercial, we're going to play a song. And I play this song today with the theme of our show, because the question that may be on the mind of many of our listeners tonight as they listen to the strong words of those speaking out against the assassination of Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah is, why do they kill our prophets? Why we stand aside and look? These are the words from a song which I'm sure you're all familiar with, and a question that will be plaguing us throughout the rest of the show is, why do they kill individuals like Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah, who clearly was doing nothing wrong to people? He was doing much good in the post-industrial wasteland that is Detroit, where people are trying to make the best of a terrible situation, a terrible capitalist crisis. Why is it that this man was killed? This is an answer that will be hopefully for our listeners solved in the course of our radio show. For now, Bob Marley, Redemption Song.
Just it's on the You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM. Broadcasting at 158 watts at 105.5 FM. On the World Wide Web at CHRY.FM. And on the Rogers Digital Network, channel 945.
CHLY 105.5 Radio Basics, and we're back. And the topic of our show tonight is the FBI assassination of Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah, who was murdered by the FBI on October 28th, 2009. I had the privilege of going out in Detroit this past weekend, where I met up with a lot of the community activists who I have been organizing and mobilizing people in Detroit against this outrage, against this injustice. And one of the people, over the course of my trip, I was able to gather audio excerpts of discussions, of public events, of fundraisers' benefits that were put on in memory of Iman Luqman Amin Abdullah and those who are reeling from the effects of his assassination, including those charged on trumped-up charges, including his son, Mujahid Karzwal. The first audio excerpt I have is from Abiyumi Azikiwe, the editor of the Pan-African Newswire and contributing editor to Workers' World, which is a working-class socialist organization and newspaper in the United States. This excerpt was recorded at an event at the Workers' World Party office in Detroit by yours truly on December 10, 2009. This is Ezekiwe speaking on the nature of the capitalist state and putting into context the assassination of Iman Abdullah, with particular focus on the history of FBI repression in the United States against black working class, the black working class revolutionary movement. This is Abiyomi Azikiwe.
47 and 1955 coincided with socialist revolutions that were taking place in China, in Korea, as well as Vietnam. The anti-colonial struggles in Asia and Africa were of great concern for the ruling class of the United States. However, it was the civil rights and black power movements of the 1950s and 60s that led the way for the lessening of political repression inside the United States. It played a tremendous role in breaking McCarthyism in this country, the struggle of African Americans. And in the aftermath of World War II, it's quite interesting because my father served in World War II, and so did my aunt, my mother's youngest sister, was in the Women's Army Corps. And now I've heard all kinds of stories that after the war, my aunt, you know, we're from the South, and my aunt would wear her uniform. This was had to be like 1946, late 1945, early 1946. It was dangerous. You know, one of her friends was telling me it was dangerous for African American soldiers and veterans to wear their uniforms in the South after the war. In fact, there was a brother in South Carolina who the police put his eyes out. He had on his military uniform. And he got on a bus. He refused to sit in the back. They called the police, they arrested him. The police took him somewhere and put his eyes out with his U.S. military uniform on. We had lynchings after World War II. There were white mob violence that went into black communities in Tennessee and other parts of the country and started trouble in the aftermath of World War II. Now, the civil rights movement organized and mobilized hundreds of thousands to oppose racism and national oppression. With the passage of the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act of 1964 and 1965, the more militant forces within the movement raised the cry for black power. Black power coincided with the urban rebellions and the mass movements to end U.S. imperialist intervention in Southeast Asia. Now, this is where the Black Panther Party came into existence during this particular time period, which we saw in the film, and we're here today to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the murder of Fred Hampton. The Black Panther Party arose during the period as a vanguard movement aimed at encouraging self-defense as well as socialist revolution. Fred Hampton, who was martyred 40 years ago this month, articulated the notion that true liberation for African Americans can only be achieved in conjunction with an international proletarian revolution. The FBI was behind the assassination of both Hampton and Mark Clark during the early hours of December 4th, 1969. And I wanted to make mention that in our newspaper, Workers' World, there's an article on page 4 entitled Remembering Fred Hampton and Mark Clark that goes into detail about the work of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark and how they had been involved in the NAACP Youth Council prior to their joining the Black Panther Party in Illinois, and how they were able to electrify young people and people in the community in Chicago to take over free breakfast programs. The Panthers had set them up, but the people would take them over, and then they'd move to another community and set up another free breakfast program. And this article talks about that. Some argue that after 40 years, much progress has been made towards the eradication of racism and sexism in the United States. Today, there are thousands of elected African-American political officials, and many women have taken leading positions in politics, in academia, in business, as well as the professions. Yet African-Americans still have disproportionately higher unemployment and poverty rates than whites. The housing, healthcare, education, and environmental crises that affect African-Americans to a far greater degree than it does whites. The United States is still a repressive country where African-Americans and Latinos are severely affected by police brutality and murder at the hands of law enforcement. Over a million African-Americans are in prison today in the United States, constituting approximately 50% of the incarcerated population, even though we only represent 12% of the overall population of people residing inside the United States. Political repression is escalating inside the United States with the attacks against the Islamic community of all races. African-American Muslims are inflicted with a double mark of being both Islamic and black in a historically racist society. It was not an accident that the FBI targeted the Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah for assassination. It's not an accident that this happened. Despite the fact that the U.S. has an African-American president, the state has not been transformed. The state organs still maintain racism and national oppression in America. Imperialist war remains a cornerstone of U.S. capitalism and racism. It will take a socialist revolution to overturn racism, national oppression, and the imperialist war machine. And I just want to conclude by pointing out that when I listened to Obama's speech the other morning, I saw it live over the BBC, and he even got up and mentioned that he really didn't deserve to get a Nobel Peace Prize, that there were people who were more deserving than him. He mentioned Martin Luther King, he mentioned Nelson Mandela, he mentioned Mother Teresa and others. And he went on to speak, and instead of providing a program for peace, he really provided a rationale for imperialist war. That's what he did. That's what I was just going to mention. 1984, George Orwell's novel. War is peace, slavery is freedom, and ignorance is strength. Thank you so much.
That was Abayomi Ezekiwe of the Pan-African Newswire speaking on the assassination of Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah. Next we have Ron Scott, an original member of the Black Panther Party and a founder of the Black Panther Party, in particular in Detroit, and also the current executive director of the Detroit Coalition Against Police Brutality. This was Scott speaking at the benefit concert held on December 10th for Mujahid Carswell, the son of the assassinated Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah, and he spoke on the parallels between the repression faced by black leaders in the 1960s and 1970s and that faced by black people today. This is Ron Scott.
I want to tell you about personal experiences here in terms of some of the things on a personal level I've gone through. I think at this particular point, what we have to do is that we have to forge unity wherever we can. We can talk about the people who may be here for evil intentions, for evil doing, to separate us, to divide us, but we have to talk about, we have to be here and we have to stand in unity. That is the only way that we are going to defeat the real terrorists who went into that place and shot Brother Luqman 18 times. They're the terrorists that we cannot allow them to be unified and then be disunified. We cannot be African-American Muslims, Pakistani Muslims, Arab Muslims, or in fact, African-American, white Americans, Latino Americans, because when it comes down to the situation that we face today, the real terror is that the only Americans that they want to see are the ones that they can put in front of a gun to try to destroy the rest of the world. And it begins here. There's a lot of stuff that's going on now about who are the terrorists among us. And the thing I always want to do is I want to jump through the television. I want to say the terrorists among us are those alphabets, the CIA, the FBI, and all the other people who are standing here and who are creating dissension every day.
That's right.
Every day. So what is our purpose? Our purpose is like what we're doing tonight. To support Brother Moon and the family, to raise money, to bring unity, to understand what we're fighting, and to organize, organize, organize.
That's right.
We have to be focused on that in a very particular way. We have to be focused on it now more than anything else. Because when we talked about counterintelligence program back in the 60s, they were in a situation at that particular time where we were in the middle of a movement and they had to take down the leadership. For the last 40 years, they have been focusing on ways to systematically take down the leadership in ways you might not even think about.
That's right.
It is not coincidental what Professor Griffin taught. It's not coincidental that after the 1990s when you had Progressive Rap, how you no longer had the Black Panthers around who was public enemy. They were shifting off the airwaves. But what we have today, folks, what we have today, brothers and sisters, is something even more powerful. We have the power of the righteousness of the movement that we stand here focused on today. We come here not to talk about somebody who was killed only. We come here to talk about somebody who will be resurrected in relationship to the movement that we are building at this particular point. And I'm standing here and I'm asking you to do this in solemnity, to do this with focus, to do this in a situation where not only do we demand an independent investigation, but we need to demand that we get that autopsy that they're trying to charge people $1,500 to get. Because we want to find out about the dog bites that took the chunks out of the lady. Because we want to find out how deeply the 18 bullets went into the body. We want to find out if it's more than 18 that went in. We want to find out not just about Freddie being airlifted, but who had Freddie on the leash and who let Freddie go.
That's right.
That's the criminal we want to find out.
That's right.
So the situation in terms of dealing with that, and Sandra, as you say, in terms of getting justice, is our unity, is our organization, and building the necessity of all of the people, not only in this room, not only in this room, but people around the world. You know what it means, and I'm going to conclude very shortly. There has never been an imam that has been killed in the United States, and very few around the world. For 2 years, there were agents inside a masjid. The same day that Brother Luqman was killed, there were guns that were pulled on people who were in prayer at the mosque. So we have to say at this particular point that not only Muslims, but we got more than enough Christians in Detroit. We need to challenge every church that they have better step up.
Say that.
Or they'll be sitting up taking collection when they're in communion and somebody will put a gun at the preacher's head.
That's right.
So in this time, in this place, in this sacred piece of ground that we stand on, we have to pledge ourselves to not let trivials divide us, to not become suspicious of one another, to not let the very enemy that is fighting us destroy our minds, because it is our minds, it is our bodies, our soul, and our heart, and our money, and our organization that will bring about the justice that we seek. So one, yes, we do demand an independent investigation, and not by the Justice Department.
Right.
We have to conduct an independent investigation with people that we choose from anywhere in the world that come to do it. We have to demand that we get that autopsy so we know what happened. And you know what else we have to demand? We have to demand that none of those people, those brothers, those individuals who are serving the people, that none of them are convicted. If any one of them are convicted, then we have to raise the level of struggle in America, because have been convicted because they were working for our peace and our justice here. I just want to thank you and thank everybody who's been here tonight. I want you to thank yourself. I want you to think, when you think about Brother Luke Mine, think about his children. Mm-hmm. Think about the brother out there who's on drugs tonight who doesn't have a place to stay.
Right.
I want you to think about the people who want to, think about the people on Sunday in terms of giving free meals that Masjid al-Haq gave. Think about the people who are going to starve because he's not there. I want you to go out and do those kinds of things. As much as we have the fundraisers for justice, let's have fundraisers for all of those people that he was serving. Let's serve the people. Let's do zakat, brothers and sisters. And let's do what's necessary so we uplift him through our service, and we uplift him by the fight for justice and the demands that we have. I want to thank you tonight. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. And I've learned one thing in the 40 years I've been involved. You have to continue to struggle.
That's right.
You have to continue to fight. No matter how much people put things in your way, you have to understand that your vision has to be for a new world and a better world. And that's what Brother Luqman was pushing and projecting. And that's what I'm about. And that's what we should be about. I want to leave you.
That was Ron Scott of the Detroit Coalition Against Police Brutality, also himself a founding member of the Black Panther Party in Detroit. Next up, we have Andrea Egypt of the Michigan Emergency Committee Against War and Injustice. And the following is was from Andrea speaking on police brutality and repression in Detroit, giving context to the assassination of Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah at a December 12th event at the Workers' World Office in Detroit. This is Andrea Egypt.
Police force of officers. Police brutality is the excessive use of physical force against the people by law enforcement officers. However, this brutality can also include verbal attacks, racial profiling, psychological intimidation, quite simply, police terror and police brutality. Widespread police brutality exists in every city and county throughout the United States. This brutality often results in false arrests, political repression, unjustified surveillance, sexual abuse, and corruption by law enforcement officers. Police officers are legally permitted to use force and are expected to do so under appropriate conditions. However, there is a blue code of silence that serves to sustain a criminal subculture within law enforcement. This subculture protects the interests of the police over and above the will of the people. Police often violate the law and get away with it. There are factors that can contribute to the misconduct on the part of the police. In many cases, police say they have a higher death rate than other professions. However, statutory laws and common laws that apply to ordinary citizens are often not upheld in issues involving the police. Unfortunately, in the United States, cases of police brutality are left up to internal affairs of the law enforcement agencies to resolve. Complaints can also be made to police commissioners and district attorneys. Nonetheless, many of these internal affairs departments and police commissions have been criticized for their lack of accountability to the public. Police officers whose actions result in serious injury and death, the violent crimes law enforcement has created, along with the independent oversight community groups that monitor police misconduct and offer support to families of those who fell prey to police brutality. That's a little shaky, man. I'm gonna clear it up right now. The Detroit Coalition Against Police Brutality was born out of the long history of struggle of those who have been ravaged by police terror on the streets inside the city of Detroit. The history of police terror is unfortunately a long and brutal one for the citizens in Detroit. As a native-born Detroiter, I can remember the reign of terror perpetuated on the fathers in my community when the big four police units that patrolled our streets would beat up one of our fathers every weekend. It was a regular as clockwork, and many would joke about whose father would be next. It was nothing to see our fathers with black eyes or lumps on their forehead, sprained elbows, and cuts from a good old boy beating. The disrespect and humiliation was ingrained in the culture of black people and poor whites. Police terror stems from the slave master's need to protect his property, the slave. As Africans continued to seek freedom, as runaways and rebels, the slave master employed more ruthless ways to bring about submission and obedience. Even after slavery had ended, law enforcement agents were used to capture, torture the Africans through lynchings and burnings between the 1890s and the 1960s. Self-righteous people justify these monstrous crimes. Yet these people are in far greater danger from their own police forces than from each other. The only terror most people encounter is a policeman with a badge, a nightstick, mace, a dog, and a taser. You can Google up to 2.2 million videos on police brutality. Police terror has crossed the lines from excessive force to unwarranted attacks on the elderly, women, students, public and elected officials. Police brutality takes on many forms. Car chases are popular. These chases capture people's attention due to the intensity and the drama of the high-speed chase and oftentimes media coverage. These car chases spark major recriminations. Reality television features footage taken from police cruisers, law enforcement, media helicopters, of actual assailants fleeing from the police. These chases put innocent lives at risk. Also, those who are being chased, the police officers pursuing the alleged assailants, bystanders, and other drivers, are thrust into a potentially dangerous road injury or death. It is estimated that 40 people a year are killed in road traffic incidents involving police, most which stem from a police pursuit. Police brutality is the mechanism that is used to divide and keep the community in a total state of just complete depression, repression, and terror, and keeps us divided on all levels at all times. The fact that these people have the right to carry a badge and kill you, and people might not even know that they did it, is something that we really need to take issue with. The Detroit Coalition Against Police Brutality gets cases on a daily basis. We don't only get cases here from the city of Detroit, we get cases from every city here in Michigan, where people are calling us, asking us for help, and what they can do because of what the police have done to one of their loved ones or either to them. Many people don't make it, those that die in the middle of the night that we don't even know, and we find them later on, the dead man that was on in the alley, or the dead man that was found in the dumpster. And oftentimes they build stories around it like they did around the Iman Lukman. They'll create a situation and an atmosphere to kill you. And so we walk around in fear, scared to death of the police, hoping and praying that we won't have any encounter with them. And I think often when I was a child, when I used to go to school before I closed, and how we used to be so happy when the teacher used to tell us that the police was going to be visiting our class tomorrow, and how much respect and just gratitude as a child we had for them, and viewed them as our friend and our protector, and as a person that would serve us when we needed help. I don't feel like that anymore. And it hurts me that a lot of young people, even young Robert Mitchell, 15-year-old man who was tased to death when the Warren police chased him to his death in Warren and tased him to death. He ran because he was afraid. He ran for the very reason that I probably would run myself, because I would fear that they would kill me. And so it's something wrong with that picture. that we are watched and viewed by the very people that we pay to protect and serve us as the enemy.
Your community radio,
CHRY
105.5.
Radio Basics, we're back. And you've been listening to Radio Basics tonight, and our feature has been covering the case of the FBI assassination of Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah. You've been hearing community leaders in Detroit speak out against the assassination, and Radio Basics was in Detroit this past weekend collecting, building this news story and collecting audio coverage of people speaking out. The next segment is from Roberto Guzman of the Detroit People's Task Force.
It's an honor for me to be here this evening to speak on behalf of Imam Abdullah. Mujahid, Jamil, and Omar, my deepest condolences and support go to them and the family. For I want them to know they are not alone in this time of sorrow and thirst for justice. We unfailingly support them. Although I did not know their father, I feel like I knew him, because he rose from a struggle we are all too familiar with. The struggle to get the devil's feet off our necks and treat us as equals. We have not overcome that, and don't we dare think we did with the election of Obama. That is an illusion. The ruling class is still in control. We are far from victory, as every struggle from foreclosures, evictions, and massive unemployment shows us. We are equals in the eyes of the CEOs, in the eyes of the government, the banks, and the corporations. And we sure as hell aren't equals in the eyes of the racist ruling class who continue to steal, cheat, lie, and murder.
That's right.
To keep us feeling helpless.
Yeah.
That is the nature of the capitalist beast. Injustices and cruelties under this capitalist system such as these are what Imam Abdullah fought against. He fed the hungry, sheltered the homeless, and gave those less fortunate hope and reason to believe that, quote, yes, we can, unquote, overcome. And yes, we can become self-empowered to do for ourselves. That, I submit, is not a terrorist. A terrorist who was struggling to pay the gas bills to keep the mosque heated was a threat to this government? I see. They labeled him a terrorist while allowing the Michigan militia to openly practice war games in the woods not far from Detroit.
That's right.
In preparation for a war against this same government. They labeled him a terrorist and shoot him dead in cold blood while allowing Rush Limbaugh and other right-wing wackos to openly desire to see a black president dead because of his color. I see. No, that is not why they killed Imam. They corporately gunned down this father to teach Detroit, one huge plantation, a lesson that we better not dare aspire to be free and believe we can do better for ourselves. Because if you do, this is what we will do to you.
That's right.
Anyone who dares instill in the people a belief that they can self-govern and better themselves is a threat to this capitalist system.
That's right.
Indeed, the bells that tolled for the Imam that day may very well toll for the rest of our people tomorrow if they don't wake up and see the racist disingenuity behind his killing. Reverend King Butler, wake up!
Yeah, really.
Reverend Wendell Anthony, wake up! Reverend Jim Holly, wake up! Because these capitalist devils don't care about you tap dancing to their tune today! Come sun up tomorrow and you dare envision a people of self-empowerment in this country, which they stole from its rightful people, and you will meet the fate of the Imam as well. Unless we stick together and defend you. I had asked myself, where Because when Webb takes to the pulpit this Sunday, he's not going to utter one word condemning this murder.
That's right.
Webb is not making any noise, and that's why the people are asleep. But lo and behold, Reverend Butler and Holly, I pray you never need to fake the Imam Met that day. Yes, our people are asleep. They are intoxicated from the distractions in this society which the capitalist devils have planted to keep them feeling hopeless, dependent, and feeling there's nothing we can do to bring about a change. The drugs, peace be upon the Imam, for his valor in fighting against it in our community. The music and many videos that glorify drugs, sex, and violence and degrade our women. The credit to pick a way of living to keep us penniless and dependent on the Federal Reserve. Who do they want us to believe is soon coming on a white horse to save the world from a global economic collapse? And worrying about what can I do to win the lotto? Are all evil designs to keep the masses helpless and dependent on the capitalist system? And all the while making them politically ignorant. Funny how as I ride the buses in this city, I listen to people talk about everything from sports games, concerts, and ways to get money. But I have yet to hear anyone in everyday public conversation on the buses say one thing to condemn the Imam's killing. Many of them don't know who he is, or what even happened. They can name every player on the Pistons team and tell you great stories about their athletic ability, but don't know and don't care about this great man. The Pistons who make millions while we struggle to pay our bills. It's intoxicating. Funny too how this past Thursday, when the call went out to the people to come join brothers Jamil and Mujahideen at St. Andrew's Hall, that same night tickets were sold out at the Pop Daddy concert at the MGM Grand. Yet the house was not that full at St. Andrew's for a call to justice. The people went to the Pop Daddy concert to eat fruit from the poisonous tree. The fruit to intoxicate them. There should have been a line snaking around St. Andrew's Hall that evening. With us! With the people saying, hurry, please, open the door! Let me in and take a bite of the fruit of truth, the fruit of justice! Let me in, please, so I can take hold of the Imam's torch and spread his message of self-empowerment and self-worth and do good things for my people! Tragic demise. Spread his message of believing not in some savior coming one day on a white horse, a white cloud, or the white house. Quit waiting is not going to happen. Believe in ourselves instead. Take hold of our own future, our own destiny, and believe in ourselves by reaching out, loving one another, and helping one another.
I know that's right.
Reach out and help our brother up. I'm standing with anger. We make heroes out of people like Puff Daddy. Another millionaire. While giving out a moment's notice to become. Now you can see the capitalists at work. And not give a moment's notice to the revolutionary heroes like Fidel and Chavez, Che Guevara, Morales and Dalia. Leaders who like the Imam fought to lift the people from their struggles. And in closing, I want to leave a word of inspiration from our comrade Fidel to the Imam's family. Sigues a la victoria!
That was Roberto Guzman of the Detroit People's Task Force speaking on the FBI assassination of the Detroit Imam, Luqman Amin Abdullah. The final segment of our radio documentary tonight is an audio excerpt of Jamil Carswell speaking at that same event. Jamil Carswell being the son of Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah. This is Jamil Carswell.
Not the first time it hit this close to home either. Because for those who don't know, Imam Jamil Al-Amin,
right,
in Atlanta, formerly known as A. Fred Brown, right, on the Black campus, is serving a life sentence right now for a crime that he didn't commit. Yeah. And the thing is, not only did he not commit the crime, the person who committed the crime came up and admitted to doing it.
Right, right.
And the FBI said, no, we got him. Mm-hmm. They've been after him since the 60s. Mm-hmm. So when they had their mindset to bring someone down, what are they going to do?
That's right.
There's not really any way to stop it. It's just, it hurts when it happens. But the thing is, one of the things that my father always taught me is community. Build a community. Stick together. Unity is the key word. Like, a lot of people look at me, a unit, one unit. But you bring a lot of units together. You have unity. You have a whole generation of people that's actually willing to stand up. And when I say fight, don't take it the wrong way, please. But stand up and fight for rights of people.
Okay.
And I can honestly say that I think my father was misunderstood. Okay? He was misunderstood by a lot of people because he never bit his tongue. He never bit his tongue. And he tried his best. He tried his best to help anyone he could, even the people who, in the end, had him killed. That whole situation happened because someone asked him for help. Mm-hmm. He's never turned his back on anyone. He's never bit his tongue. He's never pushed anyone away. And that's honestly why Masjid al-Haq is the one masjid in Michigan that's open 24 hours and open to anybody. Always have been, always will be, because that's the way my father was. That's what he did. Anybody in the community needs anything, if we can help, we will. We can help in any way. That's why we do the soup kitchen every Sunday. Matter of fact, I gotta do that tomorrow. Okay. Do the soup kitchen every Sunday. We've been doing that for pretty much as long as I can remember. I'm 28 years old. But pretty much as long as I can remember, we've been doing it. Taking care of the neighborhood. Helping people out. And the only thing that my dad really wanted was a neighborhood where children could be raised. I mean, I grew up over off of Joy Road in Dexter. Okay? And I watched it all. Police brutality, police harassment, drug dealers, shooting, prostitutes, all of it. And that's all my father wanted, was to keep that away from children. Mm-hmm. Okay? If it was just a block or two where we were, he just wanted to keep that. Go down the street with him. And I've actually seen him tell prostitutes, go down there with that. Mm-hmm. Don't do it in front of the moms. Go down there with that. Have some kind of decency. Have some kind of respect. But then next thing you know, people are saying he's terrorizing the neighborhood. I don't understand that personally. I really don't. But teaching, one of the things that I keep telling people, like, because people keep talking to me about the informant and stuff, and I said, anybody who's met my father and can do something like that to him, I guarantee you that dude is willing to commit suicide right now. Mm-hmm. He's planning suicide right now, and I know it. Because you can't do that to that kind of person and not feel something.
Feel bad.
Mm-hmm. It's impossible. So, I mean, I'm not even worried about him. Gotta deal with him.
No.
That's out of my hands completely. I don't even care. Mm-hmm. He just made it easier for my dad not having nothing else to worry about. And one of the things that I keep telling people, like, because people keep talking to me about the informant and stuff, and I said, anybody who's met my father and can do something like that to him, I guarantee you that dude is willing to commit suicide right now. Mm-hmm. He's planning suicide right now, and I know it. Because you can't do that to that kind of person and not feel something.
Feel bad.
Mm-hmm. It's impossible. So, I mean, I'm not even worried about him. Gotta deal with him.
No.
That's out of my hands completely. I don't even care. Mm-hmm. He just made it easier for my dad not having nothing else to worry about.
That was Jamil Carswell, the son of the late Imam Luqman Amin Abdullah, assassinated by the FBI on October 28th, 2009. And if you've been listening to our show, you've been tuned in for the last half an hour, you would have learned the circumstances of his tragic and unjust, untimely death at the hands of the FBI, a man who was accused in the war on terror, which is a war of terror, which is accused of terrorism in order to keep this war going, but which was who was really a man who was deeply involved in his community, who fed people, who took care of people, who housed people, and who was targeted for assassination like many other black and leaders in their communities in America. If you'd like to learn more about our radio program, Radio Basics, you should check us out. You should check out our archive of shows, which you can be linked to from our website, which is basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, please contact us at basics.canada@gmail.com or at radiobasics@gmail.com. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Da Silva. We'll see you next week. And let's go out with the song that we played partway through the show, which is a song that really spoke to the issue that we were discussing here tonight. By an artist who obviously needs no introduction, and neither does a song. Good night, Toronto.
Atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop me.